Welcome, everybody, to the November 2008 session of our International MD Support Group with over 170 affiliates, and we're nearing 3,000 members now around the world. You should have in your hand this month's newsletter, which includes a special feature about sunglasses, including how they can prolong and enhance our vision and what features to look for when it comes to our safety and comfort. Remember, sunglasses aren't just for summertime. People like us need them all year round. And I know some people listening to this presentation, it's summertime for you, so it's especially important for you. The newsletter also makes special mention of our sponsors. As I said, Macular Degeneration Research representatives are here today. Kathleen Honecker and Ed are here today. And the other is MD Foundation. Liz Troernicht is the director of that, both of whom have committed their financial support of the IMDSG through the coming year. Without them, we couldn't continue to offer this outreach totally free to you and your center. If you're thinking about making a holiday donation in return for the services provided by this outreach, please consider either or both of these caring organizations. Your tax-deductible contribution will go wherever you specify, whether that be research or educational outreach, and a gift of any amount will be greatly appreciated by either of the organizations. As a possible option, I might suggest collecting a group donation and sending it in the name of your affiliate. We'll make special mention of that in the newsletter if you'd like to do it that way. Mailing addresses for both of our sponsors can be found on the first page of your newsletter. Now, if I were still working in church music ministry, which I did for over 30 years, this is when I would have the choir sing an inspirational anthem while we pass the collection plate. In the interest of time, however, I'm going to let you take care of that at your own discretion if you'd like, and we're going to move on to introducing our very special guest speaker. Singer, actor, author, writer, producer Tom Sullivan lives and works by Sullivan's Rules. Those were invented by his dad, Porky Sullivan, so young Tommy could play baseball with the neighborhood kids. The rules became the cornerstone by which the adult Tom Sullivan came to live his life, turning any negative into a positive, turning disadvantage into advantage, and playing in every game. Born prematurely, Tom was given too much oxygen in an incubator, and though it saved his life, it did cost him his eyesight. The inconvenience, he calls it, of being blind has never kept him from competing in a world where he realized that to be equal meant that he had to be better. Even though he's had to adapt the rules slightly, he's proven that one needs not be limited by a handicap. He's an excellent golfer. He's a marathon runner, an avid snow skier, an Olympic class wrestler who was recently inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, and early in his career, Tom gained national prominence as a recording artist along with over 50 appearances on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show. I think I saw every one of those. He was a special correspondent for ABC's Good Morning America, and he's written and starred in numerous television sitcoms. You might have seen him on Mork and Mindy, WKRP in Cincinnati, Designing Women. He's currently writing and producing films for television and major motion pictures. Tom has also created a series for ESPN titled Superior Beings that is now set to become a series in primetime. He's authored 9 books to date. If You Could See What I Hear is an early biography of Tom's life, which was made into a highly successful major motion picture starring Mark Singer a few years ago. In his latest title, Adventures in Darkness, Tom takes readers through his monumental 11th summer as a blind child. For over 15 years, Tom Sullivan has been one of the most sought-after inspirational speakers on the circuit, and we are very grateful to him for taking the time to speak with us today. We're also very grateful to Ed Huggett, who made friends with him at a conference last year and asked him to come on, and it went from there. Tom, welcome to the IMDSG. Several thousand of us in the low vision and blind community are eagerly anticipating spending this hour with you.
Well, Dan, first of all, I'm incredibly humbled to be part of this and have a chance to talk to folks who clearly have a much harder road than I did as you wrestle with really one of life's most complex elements, the loss of sight at a later point. And I can't express enough how much this means to me to be part of this. Also, this feels like my favorite medium, old radio, doesn't it? I mean, don't you like the radio dramas? And I grew up as a young blind kid in my backyard listening to them all. I mean, from Argyle Sunday to One Man's Family to The Guiding Light, Young Dr. Malone, Pepper Young's Family, Ma Perkins, and then the mysteries, Johnny Dollar and Suspense and The Shadow. Radio was everything for me, and so this really is very much like sharing radio with you, which means I can lie to everybody. I'm actually 30, about 6'4", my hair is still blonde, and which is a lot of crap. I'm 61, and so some of the issues that this audience relates to are very much things I'm thinking about. How can I take care of Patty, the woman I've been married to now for 40 years when I'm in my 70s? What happens to a blind person as you get older and the jobs are less and less available? A lot of things that many of you have had to think about and deal with. And I think to maybe bring perspective to some concepts that I want to share, we're going to go back. We're going to go back 61 years to when I was born. In my case, I was 3 months premature, and I was dealing with what was then called retrolental fibroplasia. Great. Now it's called retinopathy of prematurity, but back then it was retrolental fibroplasia. And when I went to the blind school, Perkins, where Helen Keller had gone to school, all the kids, we used to sing, "We've got retrolental fibroplasia, glaucoma and cataracts too. Our friends say that we're blinks, but they know less than what they think, because we've got retrolental fiber." It was a stupid song. But it taught me one of the first lessons that you need to learn when you have disability, and that's to find both the ability and the humor in it all. But that's not where I started. I started 3 months premature, 3 pounds, 4 ounces, dropped down to 2.5 pounds, but made it. My parents brought me home, and about 5 months later, my mother began to notice that something was wrong with my eyes. It's always the mothers. Folks, here's some statistics that I want you to know about, because I want you to grasp the complexity of the way society views many of us who are blind. The national divorce rate in America is about 43%. Among families with blind children today, the divorce rate's well over 70%, which means the stress in raising a blind child, or in your case, the stress of your adjustment to macular and your family's adjustment to macular, is certainly complex, huh? So they brought me home, and my mother began to notice something was wrong with my eyes. I didn't follow the light when she opened the shades to let the sun in. She put a colored mobile above my crib, and I didn't pay attention to it. She would move around the room, and I didn't follow her with my eyes. And so she eventually went to my father, who's someone I think a lot of you would like to have known. My father was born in Ireland, in the village of Kinsale, on the west coast of Ireland. He came to America in the fourth grade, and 2 weeks after they got here, my grandfather died, and my father literally had to leave school and go out and get a job working for the Boston Globe as a runner, a messenger. He did that till he was 18, and then he tried to make a living as a boxer, a prize fighter, which wasn't very useful because he had a glass jaw and he got knocked out 9 times. But he was an undaunted kind of a human being, and it was 1919, and a marvelous thing happened to the Irish in America, prohibition. They said you couldn't drink. My father made a fortune selling bootleg booze for Joe Kennedy all over New England, and by the time I came along, he owned 9 Irish pubs, and he managed prize fighters. He was Boston's leading bookie. He had an amazing life. I grew up with athletes and fighters and people just on the edge of the law. But all of that is to say, my father was someone who never, ever could accept the idea that I was blind. He used words like, "Tom is sightless, Tom is disabled, Tom is handicapped, Tom is limited." Well, Tom was none of those things. Tom was blind. one of the important elements in accepting the concept of your site as it is today is to be honest with yourselves. I think the thing that I notice most with people, particularly with wet macular, is that so often, right up to the end, right up to the time when the sight is basically gone, you work to live in the world of the sighted, because that's who you are, that's who you've been. I think if I could offer one piece of really tangible advice, it is, don't kid yourselves, and go to work to figure out how to be blind long before it happens. Now look, companies like Allergan, a company I work for, we're getting pretty close, as Ed Huggett will tell you, we're getting pretty close to some pharmacological answers to retinal issues, and I do think there'll come a day not too far in the distant future when maybe we'll get macular under control, but the reality is that's not the way it is now. And so while you have your sight, start to work on things like mobility, develop the home skills necessary to stay independent. Recognize that if you do that, your lives don't have to really change that much. I mean, think of all the wonder of what you're doing here today. We're online, sharing this together, learning technologies, as Dan has proven, are more than available to those of you with macular. What's going on, for example, in voice speak now, rather than type, if the hands aren't as good because of arthritis or whatever, is remarkable. Dragon 10, the new Dragon voice actuation that's out now, is absolutely state-of-the-art. So the point is, make the decision to invest in being sighted, I mean, being blind, before you lose all the vision. So my father came in after he had a Jameson's Irish whiskey on the rocks, and he looked in my eyes with a flashlight, and he said, yeah, I don't know, Marie, something must be wrong. And they took me to a doctor at Mass General Eye and Ear in Boston. The guy's name was Freddie Verhoff, a doctor with the bedside manner of a Hun. This is honestly a true story because my two sisters were present. My sister Jean is 15 years older than I am, so she's 76, and my sister Peg is 8 years older. She's 68, which shows you how often Irish Catholics have sex, but that's a whole other conversation we'll have sometime. But my sister Jean was there, and this guy, Verhoff, the doctor, looked at my parents after he examined my eyes, and he said, Mr. and Mrs. Sullivan, your child is blind. Institutionalize him. That's what he said. Lock him up. Put him away someplace where he'll be safe. One of the great problems that you face as folks dealing with macular is the insensitivity so often of your physician. And I'm mentioning that to you because I want to frame this for you. One of the reasons that ophthalmologists particularly are not in tune is because these fellows and ladies are surgeons. They're trained like Olympic athletes. They're trained to win, aren't they? And if they can't, excuse me, if they can't offer you a positive result, then they're like the guy who went for the gold medal and didn't get it. And nothing in their training as residents teach them how to be interactive in the needs of people with limited vision beyond the medical questions. What I've been telling them a lot as I've traveled around the world talking to docs is, look, somebody in your practice needs to know where the rehabilitation programs are in your area. Some need to know about the mobility questions and teaching appropriate home skill and technology, all of it. But that's a war I'm fighting on another front. What I want to say to all of you is that based on what I've learned about the insensitivity of many ophthalmologists, you need to be proactive. The question is, how do you be proactive when you've just faced the devastating loss of a big part of your vision? Can I just say this to everybody? I can't imagine the pain that you've been through. I can't imagine the emptiness and fear that comes as the vision field gets less. I can't begin to understand it, because I was born blind, and being blind from birth, That's the only world I've known. But I do want to say this to you. Nobody wins by living on the sidelines. I have known so many seniors who have astounding courage and, like prize fighters, like my father, get up off the mat and fight the next round, because life is still so relevant. There's still so much love to give and share and participate in. And all it takes is the first decision to try. In my case, my parents took me home and they built a fence around my backyard. The idea was to keep me inside the fence and keep the world outside the fence. Down the street from the house where I lived, there was a baseball field. And every day I could hear the sound of kids playing ball down there, the sounds of the bat hitting the ball and the ball popping into people's gloves as they played. And I desperately wanted to be part of the game. My father had given me a Louisville Slugger baseball bat. And I started picking up rocks from the ground and throwing them up in the air and trying to hit them with the bat and announcing myself as if I was Ted Williams playing for the Boston Red Sox. Well, one afternoon, I swung that bat and caught the rock dead center and hit a long fly over my own fence like it was Fenway Park, a home run. And I ran around my yard, and slid into my own make-believe home plate. But there was a little boy there who'd been playing in the real game down the street, and he came by and he looked through the fence and he said, "What's the matter, kid? Are you blind?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, that's a stupid game, and I think you're a stupid kid." And then he started to chant. He sang, "Blindy, blindy, blindy, blindy." I hated that child. I picked up rocks from the ground and threw them at him. He kept moving out of the way. "Blind," I'd throw a rock. "Blind." Eventually, he went away. And I went to the corner of my yard and sat on a tire swing and cried my eyes out. But something wonderful happened, everybody. Something I think needs to happen to every person listening to this broadcast. Because you only have one life, and what you do with it can only be determined by you. No matter how much you're loved by your families, no matter how much you're cared about by your friends, no matter how much commitment there is on behalf of your rehabilitation counselors or your ophthalmologist or optometrist, in the end, the decision has to come down to you. And what I'm suggesting to you is it's never too late to become competitively angry. Not destructive, competitive. To develop that attitude that says, if there's technologies out here, if there's rehab available, if there are friendships to share, if there are home skills to develop, if there is any hope that I can turn my disadvantage into advantage, I'm going to do it. And that brings me to a concept that's absolutely basic to understanding Tom Sullivan. The idea that all disadvantages in this life, no matter how compounded, no matter how graphic, no matter how serious, all disadvantages can be turned into advantages without exception. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to illustrate it in the most graphic story I can tell you. Dan noted that I got involved in wrestling as a boy. It's a contact sport. You know, you grab the other person and throw them on the ground and try to kill them. I lost the first 14 matches in 2 minutes and 23 seconds altogether. I mean, I was awful. The coach we had from Boston was a sarcastic old guy. And when I went out for the 15th match, he said, "Listen, Sullivan," he said, "the kid you're going to compete against is a much better athlete than you are." He said, "Go out and do the best job you can and try not to be dead." Real positive, right? I lost that match. But I realized that all I could do was the best job possible. Hey, folks, that's all you can do with your lives. Channel your energies to do the best job possible. I lost that match. But when I allowed myself to relax and just do the best I could, I won the next 187 in a row. And a world championship and some other things. That's not important. What is the idea of turning disadvantage into advantage. Now, as I told you, I was born with retrolental fibroplasia, 3 months premature, too much oxygen in the incubator. But over the next 20 years, I also developed glaucoma. And for any of you that have had it, you'll never forget the headaches. Eventually, they enucleated my eyes, and mine are prosthetic. You take them out at night like contacts, and you wash them off, and you put them back. So I was competing against a kid from the Soviet Union. The score was 11-3. The Russian was ahead. Every time he knocked me down, it got more and more painful, so I did the only thing I thought made sense. I just reached up and popped out one of the little suckers and dropped it on the mat and said, "Stop, stop." He said, "Why?" I said, "I lost my eye." And the kid looked down and saw it and went, "Bruh." Anyway, he threw up on the mat. And in the World Games record book, it still says Sullivan over Asmanov by default. That's turning disadvantage into advantage. And it's possible for everyone. The other thing I want to tell you about is that Virchow was basically condemning me to a life of dependence. When he said to my father, "Put him someplace where he's going to be safe," he was saying that I was going to be a dependent person. I spent my whole life trying to become independent, right? All the sports you've heard about, all that stuff, be independent. What I have learned is that we are interdependent. And in that interdependence, we come to understand what it really means to be human. I also believe that in every life there are turning points, moments that shape us, define us, frame who we are as people. And I don't want to have this conversation with you without you understanding that Tom Sullivan, this new friend of yours, has had to face some pretty critical turning points. My wife Patty and I have two grown children, our daughter Blythe and our son Tom. When our daughter was 4 years old, we had just come to California because I was trying to seek fame and fortune and make it in the record business. What I want you to understand is that at that time in my life, I felt pretty damn sorry for myself. And I'll bet there's a fair number of you in this audience who feel just the same way. I felt like I had been cheated because I was blind. That's what I felt. See, I had gone to Perkins, where Helen Keller went, as I said, the school for blind kids, and in that school I was the best at everything. Best singer, best athlete, best student, best. But I'd go home on weekends and nobody would play with me in the neighborhood. You see, I was the best at being blind, but the worst at being sighted. When they'd pick up teams, you know, and you'd put your fingers out odd or even, and somebody would say, "You take Jane, and you take Charlie, and you take Joe, and you take Jimmy." We'd get to the last pick, and they'd say, "Well, you take the blind guy." So I was a pretty angry kid. And we came to California, and I was trying to make it in music. It was a June morning, and my wife, Patty, went shopping. My job was to watch our children. Watch our children. The telephone rang, and I answered it, and the guy on the other end was Johnny Carson. He had seen me in a nightclub the night before and was asking if I'd like to do the show. Folks, I got so involved in the conversation, I never heard the sound of the little girl crossing the living room. I never heard my daughter Blythe open the sliding glass door. I never heard her feet on the deck. But I heard the sound of the splash when she fell in the swimming pool. When she fell in the swimming pool. I called her name, Blythe, Blythe. I screamed it, "Blythe!" No answer. I remember I scrambled outside and fell over chairs and tables and kind of groped to the edge of the pool and rolled into the water, and I realized that the only possibility would be to dive under and grope along the bottom and hope to God, hope to God I'd touch her. And I started to count the seconds, 15, 16, 17, swim the length of the pool, surface at about 25 and scream her name, Blythe, Blythe, dive again, 30, 31, 32, 33, 35, Blythe, Blythe, 35, Blythe, Blythe, no answer. It got to 40, and I came to the surface, and I found that I was now standing in about shoulder-deep water, standing in shoulder-deep water. And I looked up to heaven, and I said, God, isn't this some unbelievable joke? You've given me these two beautiful children. You've let me marry the girl of my dreams. You gave me a Harvard education. I went to the Olympics. I'm out here in California chasing a dream in show business. All of it means nothing, because right now in this water, this child is going to die, and she's going to die because it's my fault, because I'm blind. And I hate you, and I hate life. And then I started to cry. And I said, look, God, if you'll just give me this one thing, this one moment, I'll live an exemplary life. And then there was a quiet sound. You wouldn't hear it. Not because you couldn't, but because you wouldn't. It was the sound of her air bubbles. And they blipped, blipped, blipped their way to the surface. And I followed them and dove down and found her in about 9 feet of water and brought her up and respirated her. And when she breathed, it sounded like a dove at sunset on a summer night. At that moment, folks, I saw the best and the worst of what it was to be blind. The worst was this child was going to die in the pool, and it was my fault. The best was that I found her, and she's an astounding young woman. So here's the bottom line, everybody. When I'm an old guy and I leave this planet, here's what I wanted to say on the tombstone. I wanted to say, here lies Tom Sullivan, husband, father, author, actor, athlete, humanitarian, community citizen, who, by the way, happens to be blind, who, by the way, happens to be blind. If I can change the label, then my life will have been absolutely, unequivocally worthwhile. And so that's what I want for you. There's nothing more difficult than losing your sight later on in life. Nothing I can think of. But let me frame it this way for you. I'd trade all these achievements for the rainbows you've seen. I'd trade all of it to see my beautiful Patty smile. I'd trade all of it to surf off the California coast with my son. I'd trade all of it to walk on my golf course all alone at sunset, playing shots just because I wanted to, all alone. So don't kid yourselves. I understand what it means to not have sight. I get it. But you can remember what blue is. You know what a sunset's like. What I'm working for here, everybody, is perspective. What I want you to feel is that life offers all of us challenges. Challenges that we find difficult to accept, challenges that sometimes go beyond us, beyond our scope, beyond our sense of being able to deal with them. But if you wake up in the morning and you know you have another day to live, the question is, what do you do with that day? No no matter what your age, no matter what your circumstance. Most of you have worked hard all of your lives. You've raised your families, and you've done it with a sense of pride in what you do. I don't think that the state of macular degeneration should take away that sense of who you are, your own uniqueness. See, I believe everyone in this life offers something special. There are no two people just like you. God made you unique. And so even as you face macular, I want you to focus on the pride you take in what you can offer life. And I define pride as personal responsibility for individual daily effort because it's required. Pride in what? Pride in being the same person you were prior to the time you lost sight. Because remember, I said disadvantage can be turned into advantage. Turning points can be overcome. Pride in being people who still can be people who are purposeful. To love your grandchildren or great-grandchildren. To share your knowledge and wisdom with your children and with friends. To participate actively through the use of technologies and the kindness of those you share with, that's still available. It is still of purpose for all of you. And here's the big word. This is the one that I think so often gets lost when life becomes too tough. The word is passion. To be a passionate human being and to bring that passion, no matter what your age or circumstance, to life. What is life worth if it's not worth passion? For me, the cheeseburger I'm going to have when this is over is as important as the run I took this morning on the beach. It's all relative. It's how you engage. Pride in being unique people who are purposeful and passionate. That's the central theme of this message. There is no one like you. You are unique. Disadvantage can be turned into advantage. Human beings need to understand the difference between dependence, independence, and interdependence. All of us face turning points that challenge our character, and Dr. King was right when he said, "We're not measured by the color of our skins, but by the content of our character." And each of us can engage in living lives with pride in being people who are purposeful and I wish you could all say it out loud. In fact, let's do that. I can't hear you, but 1, 2, 3, passionate. Passionate to live lives as caring, loving, passionate human beings. I've loved my half hour, and what I think we're going to do now is have some questions typed in, and then Dan and my pal Ed Huggett are going to read them, and I'll try to answer them for you. So start those fingers spinning, folks, and hit the type keys, and let's see what we get. All right?
Tom, I hope you could hear the laughter, and if you could hear tears, I'm sure you could have heard them too, all over the world as you were speaking. And I think I even heard several thousand people joining with you on the chant, passion, because that's definitely what you have shown through your whole life. I've followed you for as many years as you've been doing this, and you've always inspired me, and I hope that anybody who's been possibly not paying too much attention and didn't know you before now feels that you are among one of their friends. You truly do get it, and I know you have changed many of our lives today, even if just a little bit, in helping us to get it too. We're going to turn this program over to Ed Huggett, who is the man who discovered you in our world and brought you to us, and he's going to moderate the question and answer session. So if you don't have any questions, it's because you covered everything beautifully, and maybe we'll just spend the time talking amongst ourselves. But if anybody has questions out there, feel free to start typing those into the window up there, comments or questions of any kind. We'll read them aloud. And Ed, I'm going to turn that job over to you.
I have been sitting here on the edge of my seat the whole time with two feelings. One was just dying to talk to you. And the other was, after that, I don't think there's anything else I could say that would add to that. But I know you and I haven't spoken by voice since I saw you last year, and we had a great dinner together. And so honored to be called your friend, and I appreciate that. And I certainly feel the same way about you.
Well, for all of you that are listening, Ed and I really are great friends, and he performed a wonderful service for me with a little boy that needed his help. He's a great doc, a great friend, and I'm going to see you next week for Dr. Gill's ball. I expect you to have my Jameson's Irish whiskey present, and we'll have another one of those dinners, my pal.
Okay, Tom, as we're waiting for some of the questions to come through, I'd love to have you share the story that I heard regarding you learning how to pitch and pitching in the Little League.
I have tried, ladies and gentlemen, I have tried every weird sport. The Little League story was, you know, everybody in life looks for a moment, a breakthrough, and mine came. I told you that my parents built this fenced-in yard to keep me inside, and I'd listen to the baseball games. Well, after the kid called me blindy and picked on me, I needed a miracle to happen. And by the way, I believe in miracles. My miracle came 3 weeks later. Their names were Billy and Mike Hannon, H-A-N-N-O-N. Billy lives in Boston. He's been my best pal for 50 years. Billy and Mike moved into the house right next door. And I could hear them playing baseball in the next yard. But remember, what was between me and them, I told you earlier. An 8-foot-high chain-link fence. Here's the deal, folks. Whether you're 21 or 85, life keeps putting up fences, and we have to decide whether we're going to climb them. I decided to do that, and what I want to do is shift this story to my friend Billy Hannon. Billy, as I said, has been my best friend for 50 years, and he lives in Boston. And Billy and I are in a group of guys that have all done pretty well in life, and we, every year, we meet on Cape Cod at Billy's house down on the Cape, and we each put up considerable amount of money, and we put it in a football pool, and we bet on teams all year, and the winner, if we win, the money goes to the Blind Children's Center, a little school that we have in L.A. for children. Some years we don't give them anything. Some years we can give them thousands and thousands of dollars for the kids. But the last time we got together to have this powwow, Billy started to tell the story about how he met me as a toast at dinner, and he does it in his accent. He said, "Yeah, I'm in my yard, you know, and I'm not bothering anybody. And geez, I look up there on the fence, and there's some kid up there, and he's blind, and my God, he's going to jump." So I did. I leaped off the top of the fence and crashed on the ground, and Billy came over, and he looked at this hulk on the ground, and he said, "Wow," he said, "that was a gnarly fall." He said, "I'm Billy Hannon." I said, "I'm Tom Sullivan, and I'm blind." And he went, "Wow." But then he said the three most important words I've ever heard. Billy said, "Want to play? Hey, senior friends of mine, you can still play. You can still play the game. You can still believe. You can still hope. You can still dream. You can still try. You can still win. You can sometimes lose. It's part of the process, isn't it, huh? Want to play." And Billy was as good as his word. 3 days later, he showed up at my house, only this time he had on every kind of catcher's equipment a kid could wear, including a football helmet, a catcher's mask, chest protector, rib pads, hip pads, elbow pads, knee pads, chin pads, and a jock. Because Billy had decided that the kid who was going to throw a hard object at him was blind. He built a home plate and a pitcher's mound in my yard. And for the next 8 months, I threw baseballs at old Bill until I got to where I could pitch pretty well. And then Billy and I went to see my father. Now, the secret to doing that was to go down to one of the Irish pubs he owned after 6 o'clock at night when he had a couple of belts, and you could get him to do whatever you wanted. So we went in, and Billy said, "Mr. Sullivan, I think Tom could play in the Little League." My father said, "Oh, you do, boy." He said, Well, what position did you have in mind? I said, well, geez, Dad, I thought if you'd arrange it, I'd like to pitch. Now, I don't know how many uniforms he had to buy or who he had to bribe. But finally, they arranged that Billy would be my catcher, and his brother Mike would stand out on the pitcher's mound with me in case some kid hit a line drive. And you should come back with me now to that game. You're 11. You've gone to the ballpark, walked in the dugout, picked up a bat, strolled up to home plate, looked out on the pitcher's mound, and the guy who was going to throw a hard object at you is blind. So I struck the first kid out on three pitches. He never moved, just stood frozen in one spot. I walked the next three batters. The next kid popped up, and the count went to 3 balls and 2 strikes on the sixth hitter with the bases loaded. And I thought, my life depends on what I do with this pitch right now. Hey, folks, that's exactly what happens when you sit across the desk from the doctor and he tells you you've got wet macular. You fall right into depression, don't you? Because you already knew you had a problem, and now he's confirming it. And you get depressed. I have a theory about depression. I believe, and Ed knows how much I believe this, I believe that depression is based on yesterday's news, not today's events. I'm going to say it again. I believe that depression is based on yesterday's news, not today's events. You cannot be depressed about the moment you're in. You're too damn busy living it, huh? You can only be depressed about a past experience, and you can't bring it back. So, 3 balls, 2 strikes on the batter, bases loaded. I wound up like a coiled spring and threw the ball and heard a horrible sound because I hit this kid right in the head. He went down in a heap. That was the end of my baseball career. Yeah, sports has been interesting. I'm passionate about all of them. I play golf. I've got the only guide dog who's right here at my foot right now, a big, beautiful German shepherd named Edison. Edison is the only dog, guide dog, trained to retrieve golf balls by pouring aftershave all over them. And then Edison and I go out and play at midnight because what the hell do I care? I hit them. He goes and gets them. So golf's good. Skiing I share with my daughter, Blythe. She's the most amazing guide. We have had times on a mountain when she skied right behind me in the tracks of my skis, and she's letting me turn independently and never says a word. That is freedom. I have these 5 guys that I run marathons with. One of them is a Presbyterian minister. This morning the conversation was whether I was pulling him down to hell or he was yanking me at least as far as purgatory. We haven't decided. Tennis is a lousy game. I've got a great serve, but if they hit it back, we quit. But sports has been a wonderful part of my life. If somebody said, what's been the secret to breaking through, you know, I would say that sports and music were my tickets out of darkness. And that's what you're looking for. The fates may have placed you in the dark, but technologies, love of family, friendships, those are the elements that can become your tickets out of darkness. And I want to end that comment by noting again, blindness is not a death sentence. It's not a death sentence. So we'll go back to you, Ed, and see if anybody has anything, huh?
Yeah, James Unser at Fox Lake Low Vision Support Group. If you have never had vision, how do you know what you're missing? So that was their questions. Any comments on that?
So the question is, if I've never had vision, how do I know what I'm missing? You know what's wonderful about that question? I'm the lucky one, as I said, because I don't really know what I've missed. So, but in the same breath, see, this is wonderful that you asked. Face the relevant truth of life. Okay, so Tom doesn't know what he's missed. So in a sense, though it's difficult, aren't you better off? And let me reverse this for you. I've enjoyed a world of senses that you've never taken the time to appreciate. This morning I ran on my beach, me and the German Shepherd, because I'm getting ready for a marathon. On my beach, there are 15 different kinds of waves you can hear that come in the mornings, all the way from the ones at low tide that sweep over California sun-drenched sandbars in an arc, a roaring arc that sounds like the cannonade in a war zone, to the ones at high tide that pound together in a dull thud like Muhammad Ali is fighting Joe Frazier. There are 11 different textures of sand on my beach. And as I run, there's a restaurant up above it called Millie's, and it cooks breakfasts, and the smells of bacon and eggs and sausage and hot coffee comes drifting down and blends with eucalyptus trees and lilac and orange blossom, and then the astounding sensual ocean, the smell of single-cell life clinging to sedimentary rock and the weed and the kelp and the this blending of smells is incomparable. I mean, there's just nothing like it. And then at the end of my beach, there's a bunch of sea lions that live on the rocks. And about a mile out from the end of the run, I can hear them barking, and they're like my Olympic audience, you know. And the dog and I run faster, and the dog now is galloping and planing off, and I'm like a guy on the end of a water ski rope as we roar to the end. Those are things, as sighted people, you never did. Not that way. See, life's relative. Sure, how can I know about things I don't, how can I miss things I don't know? But think about this. I don't care how old you are. You can open up your senses. Have you ever listened to the sound of a smile or felt the warmth of a hug when it was really meant? How many different kinds of handshakes are there? And then when you pick up your phone to answer a call, you can tell immediately what someone's thinking or where they're coming from, right? Just by the sound of the nuance of their voices. I mean, how remarkable is life in that way? So, to answer the question, sure, God took something away from me, and there's a lot I don't know. But you people have had it all. Treasure it. Love it. Live it. Okay, Ed.
Okay, Tom, thank you so much. That really gives us a lot of insight. I also wanted to mention, I've been told, Tom, that most of your audiobooks are available at Barnes & Noble. Go on barnesandnoble.com, I believe the website is there. But Barnes & Noble, head on over there and you can find most of Tom's audiobooks. One other thing someone asked, and that is one of the affiliates, Macular Degeneration. Tom, do you understand the concept of color, is their question.
The wonder about this is, no, I don't. I mean, reds, greens, yellows, purples, I don't. And the other thing is, in a week when we have just gone through certainly the most astounding moment in modern American history, with the affirmation of an African-American man as future president of the United States, I've never felt black, white, yellow, or red either. And I think I'm the luckiest guy on the face of the earth, as Lou Gehrig said. I've never dealt with, A, I don't know colors, and B, I don't deal with it as it relates to the labels that we face. And this is the wonder of what blindness has taught me, that labels don't matter. Now, one of the things, my wife, Patty, is a beautiful woman, and to me, she hasn't aged a day. 40 years of marriage, and she's still the same girl. And aren't I lucky? Aren't I lucky? Ed?
Absolutely, Tom. I think one of the things that is so common with you and I is that we relate to people's feelings and their understandings and misunderstandings, and we really realize it's all about relationships. If you don't mind, you really relayed a very touching story that really showed me that you really opened up when I talked to you last, and that was a story that if you're comfortable sharing, I would love for you to do that. If not, that's okay too, but you had a great little story on how you met your wife, Patty. Would you mind sharing that with everyone?
It's a great story. Patty and I fell in love in a cheap bar on Cape Cod. Yeah, that's almost right. What happened was I was going to Harvard College and University, and I needed money to stay in school, and I got a job playing piano on Cape Cod in a bar in Yarmouth called Deacon's Perch. And it was a beautiful little pub, and it was my first big success as a singer, and you know, people crowded in. We had standing room only most nights, and Betty White, the beautiful woman and wonderful woman that was in Golden Girls and every other television piece for over 50 years, Betty White and her husband Alan Ludden, the wondrous game show host that brought us all so much pleasure with Password and the College Bowl, and Alan and Betty came to Cape Cod to do summer stock. And at Cape Cod Playhouse, they were doing a play called Bell, Book, and Candle. And they would come in every night and order shrimp and clam chowder and have a couple of drinks and listen to me sing. And I got to know them. And at that time, I must admit, how do I say this? Well, if there was a beautiful girl in the room, I lied and cheated and stole my way into their hearts. I mean, I was shameless about, I would beg and use blindness and, oh my God. And Alan Ludden and Betty White saw all this, and one night Betty White called me over and she said, you know, you may be, I guess I can say this because we're online, right? She said, you may be the dumbest son of a bitch I ever knew. I said, why? She said, Tom, there is a girl in the second row, and every night she sits there, and her eyes never leave your face. And if you don't date her, you're ridiculous. So I met Patty, and the next day we went to the beach. And as we were coming out of the water, I gave it one of those cheap blind things where I had my arm around her, and I thought, oh, Braille is pretty good. This girl is really put together. And so I went for one of the cheap lines. I said, you know, Patty, I said, you're the kind of girl my mother always said I'd marry. And she stopped dead in the sand and looked right up and said, count on it. that was 39 years ago, and we're still rolling along. Ed?
Oh, that's great. It's wonderful. We earlier saw a photograph of your family and your beautiful wife, and we really appreciate you sharing that with us. Mr. Unser at Fox Lake Low Vision Support Group, he says, Tom, you are truly blessed. God gave me macular degeneration so I can understand and help others with this problem. And someone else says that macular degeneration, Tom, what have your children chosen to do with their lives? Would you mind sharing that?
Well, they're wonderful. My daughter Blythe is now the associate, I don't know what to call her, the associate administrator of production at Paramount Studios here in California. And my son Tom is a songwriter who, to make a living, is a contractor, and he does remodels all over the area where I live. My daughter had a wonderful thing. I have a movie in development at Paramount right now, and my daughter is technically my boss. Yeah. So she came home the other night and she said, Dad, pour yourself a drink. I did. I went over and got my Jamesons, and she got a vodka tonic. We sat down. She said, you know, Dad, now that I have this big job at Paramount, don't expect any favors. I said, oh, yeah? How do you feel about being cut out of the will? So they are great, great children. Blythe is my ski guide, as I said, and Tom lines up all my golf shots. So we share. And I think my blindness has given them a wonderful perspective on life. They've both. Tom was the youngest teacher of disabled skiing ever certified. He was a 12-year-old kid and learned to ski as an amputee. Blythe spent all of her high school years working with guide dogs and training them for blind people, taking puppies in. So they're very unique young people, and again, I think my blindness has served as a very positive thing in their lives, which brings me to that point about all of you. This question of your vision loss and how you use it as it relates to your families becomes central to your lives. I think you can make it a... Here's the thing. Did you ever stop and think about the idea that All of these people in your lives love you. Your loss of sight gives you a chance to let them express it. Remember, I think in life, expressing love is as relevant as giving it or getting it. And I think so often when you have a disability, you tend to close off. And actually, it's others who don't get to express the thing that matters the most to them, and that's you. So as they say around my Irish neighborhood, let them love you. Let them love you.
All right, Tom, thank you so much. We could keep going on for hours, and honestly, really appreciate it. And just love hearing you, and I sometimes forget what I'm even doing here. You've been such a wonderful a guest here and make my job tremendously easy. We look forward to hearing more from you in the future, certainly seeing your films, and we'll be looking for you in some of the old reruns of Mork and Mindy and MASH and so many other places that you come into our homes. So I do want to thank you for all that, and we have to wrap it up here. So I do want to express my thanks to MD Support, MD Foundation, and Macular Degeneration Research. Certainly without their sponsorship, we couldn't be here tonight. So I want to turn this back over to Dan, and Dan, take it away, and thank you so much, and I'm going to sign off myself here, and I want to tell everyone, just keep looking up.
Okay, thank you very much, Tom Sullivan, Austin Yarton, and, of course, Dr. Ed Huggett and our group facilitators all over the world for helping us bring this program to your low-vision communities. We're looking forward to seeing you again next month when we present Cooking Without Looking, Practical Tips and Healthy Holiday Recipes, brought to us by TV show host Celia Chacon from Palm Beach, Florida. Until then, don't forget to take good care of yourselves and each other. Goodbye.